you're tapping into that effortless reality, and it's the moment when you said, it doesn't have to be that difficult. There has to be another way. For me, that's a very key word. Have you thought that most of our problems are due to us trying to do too much? But sometimes it's just a moment to step out of the situation just for a second, and you see it from a different angle, and then you say, oh, how did I miss that? But while you're in, running around with your to-do list and trying to fit everything to your own preconceived ideas, it's a self-defeating attitude, but we all do it. That's the whole goal for us, to get enough of those moments to step out. And then you see how things kind of coalesce on their own.
Hi, I'm Bob Mathers, and welcome to The Growth Mixtape, a podcast where I talk to the most interesting people you might not have come across yet. I find that these conversations give me new insights and perspectives about topics I didn't know existed. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first, but just like songs and a mixtape, it creates something memorable and emotional. Today we talk to Dr. Tatiana Guan, a renowned physicist who after 20 years went looking for answers in the most unconventional of places, astrology. Now, this conversation challenged a lot of my biases and preconceptions of astrology because, frankly, I've always thought it was gypsy crystal ball readers and Sunday morning horoscopes. Tatiana does a great job of demystifying astrology as we dive into the fascinating intersection of science and spirituality. We explore the concept of effortless reality, this state of flow where you align with the energy of the universe and manifest your desires without effort or stress. We talk about the profound impact of daily, monthly, and even 29-year cycles on our lives, and how we can use these laws of the universe to live a fuller, easier life. This was awesome. So much fun. Please enjoy Dr. Tatiana Guan. So welcome, Tatiana, to the podcast. Wow, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bob, for having me.
You know, it's interesting this morning, reflecting on this conversation, I've been thinking about, like, what is it about this conversation that I'm so excited about? And it's such a unique journey, the idea that there's someone that committed their lives to understanding kind of the laws of the universe, but didn't find the answers she was looking for. And she didn't turn to another branch of science. She turned to astrology, which I equate a lot more with spirituality than science. And so that the fact that there might be actually be a bridge between these two worlds that, at least in my kind of juvenile adolescent mind, I think of as very separate is really compelling. And my wife is a beautifully spiritual person. I've always been sort of the very rational scientific person. So this is in a lot of ways, like the story of my life, like trying to negotiate these two worlds. So that, I think that's what I'm most excited about.
It's interesting that you bring it up as a separate field, because in my mind, it's actually one world. And if anything, I actually have problems and troubles separating and putting the boundaries. And that has been a struggle throughout my life, because there are a lot of boundaries in our society. This is spiritual, and this is scientific, and this is physics. It could be just my personality having troubles with the boundaries in my head.
Right. Well, I mentioned in the intro that you've got a PhD in physics, and of course you've been a professor and a researcher for over 20 years. So if we just step back, I'd love to know what interested you in that field.
Oh, it has been so long time ago. I don't really remember ever making a conscious choice. My teachers discovered that I had aptitude for the mathematics around 10, and they encouraged me to do a lot of mathematics. At some point, I had a wonderful teacher of physics, and I incorporated it. And by the time the college came around, I think it was just, what comes easy? It's nice, let's go. So it's kind of that effortless reality way, even though back then I was not very conscious about it. It was more as I was growing up and I came to the United States to do my PhD, I became a little bit more self-aware of my choices. I've always had that aptitude of let's go and experiment a little bit, let's make some sense out of this world. And that kind of places me very naturally within the physical sciences. Of course, as I mentioned, with those boundaries missing in my head, I never felt compelled to stop at the boundaries of physics. And so if someone comes up and talks about spirituality, I said, oh, really? Can we see it playing out in the other world? And so I would just think, welcome it back into the physical world. And that's how I ended up having a PhD in physics, I guess. The short answer would be it was the easy way to go. But of course, it was not all of it.
Yeah, it's funny that you say a PhD in physics was the easy way to go. There's nothing that sounds easy about that to me. So you had your PhD in physics. I mentioned you were a researcher and professor. Something happened around 2020, though, that sort of set you on a different path. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, yes. Actually, the Harbingers showed up more like around 2014. And I just found myself overwhelmed. I was trying to do everything the perfect way. But that attitude without checks and balances and understanding of what we're trying to do can get you into a very unpleasant corner. I was having a full-time job. I had my first baby. So I said, well, I'll take care of the baby during the day and I'll teach during nights, keeping the full-time job. But of course, I had to feed the baby, and so it was all organic, homemade, and I wanted to clean. And you see where I'm going, right? This is no effortless reality. So it was a lot of soul-searching, navel-gazing. So that process had already started around 2010, probably even 14. And by 2020, it had crystallized. The 2020 was a pivotal moment. Before that, I felt like I was an outlier. My voice felt like I was an outlier, perhaps in the spiritual community, but I was looking forward to get my voice out among everybody, not just the spiritual community. And so I don't know, maybe the worldwide pandemic, but something shifted overnight. That was the moment when I finally said, that's it. Either I go and start sharing my ideas and sharing this journey or what I have learned, or other people will have to reinvent the wheel. Why? Why not go the easy way? So back to that effortless reality.
So yeah, you've mentioned that term effortless reality. And there's a couple of things in that story I wanted to circle back on. But before we do that, so what does that mean?
The easy way. Although, you know, the easy way is kind of, it has connotations, as you mentioned. People would say, well, does it mean that if I'm lazy, it's the good way to go? So that's why we have to go and start putting the qualifiers. What is that sense? The concept is actually old. We just changed the labels as the centuries progress. And you can go back to the Taoists, and they have this idea of the non-doing doing, or the Wu way. Like those little kids in the playground when they learn how to kick and swing without parents' help. There are no chart diagrams. There are no theory and explanation. You tell your kids, just do it. Try. And one day they click and that's it. So how do we click in that effortless reality? I find it the most interestingly that athletes already are aware. They talk about the in the zone. There's something there. They click. If you follow basketball, you can see Caitlin Clark shooting all the baskets and everything is sinking in. On a day when she is not in the zone, everything feels forced. So it's a combination of a confidence that things are working out for you, knowledge that you don't have to rush and tweak everything, and it's almost like the desire to just linger for one moment, let the universe adjust around yourself, and you just go with the flow. Which reminds me that the psychologists have that term, the flow. So there are a lot of people from very different fields dancing around this idea of things go in an effortless way with minimum effort or tinkering or pushing and controlling on your part.
Certainly athletes would be no stranger to this, you know, getting in the zone and all the preparation they do for that. But for the rest of us, at least for me, it's always seemed to be something that kind of happens by accident. And the problem is it doesn't happen when I need it. I know that the ideas will probably, that elusive idea that I need to pull this together will probably come when I'm out on a walk or when I'm not trying so hard, except as that deadline gets closer, I feel more pressure, and it's this cycle of, it gets really hard to break out of it. So I'd love a way to be able to conjure up that state of flow or that effortless reality when I need it, instead of just hoping that it shows up, because sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't.
I wish I had an easy answer for you, but there's where the vicious cycle that you mentioned, the more you put an effort to stay in it, the more likely you're out of it.
Right.
It's very counterintuitive. So how do we do it? I don't have a prescription to that. It's really practice when you're not under pressure. Mm. Take it the athlete way. They practice day in, day out. They don't get into the flow when they're already playing at Wimbledon, if they're a tennis player. By then, it's too late. And it's kind of like a critical mass in those leisurely moments with your family, going, making decisions. Or the best way to practice to me, for me, is driving. Someone cuts you in front. Well, you can go the effortless way. Make peace with the universe and invite the universe to ask, to tell you why this happened. Why are you dealing with that? I think ultimately it's a practice. It goes back to the little kids on the swing. There's no way we can give a little cheat sheet to a five-year-old and bring them immediately to the state of swinging. If you have children, you probably know the process. It was very frustrating. They would say, "Mom, show me, tell me." And you tell, but it's useless. It falls flat until one day they say, "Look what I did." I'm not sure if you're going to enjoy that answer, but that's pretty much all I have.
Is there a scientific kind of basis for how this works?
I'm not sure if I can label it scientific. I like to be very practical. And so sometimes I feel like practice beats science. Science comes second, because in the end of the day, you cannot argue with reality. This is how we learn. But what I've noticed that a lot of times we just have to practice before we start even explaining, even in science. Before we build our scientific theories, someone has to be out in the field collecting data. So this is where we are. We're still toddlers collecting data and collecting some little pieces of evidence or experiences. Yes, we all want to be already the next stage, being scientific with a theory, with the cheat sheets, with the procedures, so we can actually teach everybody. But without that first step, even science doesn't work.
Yeah, so interesting. So you talk a lot about astrology, and I have to admit, I have preconceived notion. I know very little about astrology, so let's just say that right off the bat. So I'm hoping you can help demystify it a bit. But what I do know of it certainly isn't scientific. It seems like, you know, foo-foo, spiritual, closer to witchcraft than science. I hope you don't take any offense at that. It's my own ignorance of it. So can you tell me a little bit about astrology and how this plays into all of this?
No offense taken at all.
Good.
And I'll tell you a story how I ended up with astrology in the first place. It was 1999. And people were terrified by the year 2000 bug. I don't know if you remember that. Our computers will crash. You would go on December 30th. I went to the grocery store and they had this sign that said, "When you wake up on January 1st and you realize that the world continues, we will not take back all these cases of canned food." So on the fledgling internet, they started circulating this ridiculous nonsense messages that Nostradamus had predicted the year 2000 bug. And I'm like, really? First of all, I have read that book, and to me, it was very gibberish. The style is so confusing, full of astrological symbols. And you're telling me that you fished out of those quatrains something so coherent that, you know, so I actually started as a joke, and I wanted to show to my husband that this doesn't make sense. And he knew it. He's a physicist. He's like, "Look at that." But he knew I had interest in spirituality. So he tossed it my way to hear my opinion. And I was so upset, I guess, in that sense. Like, did anybody even bother reading Nostradamus? Did you even know how confusing those lines are. And being the scientist that said, hey, you cannot judge if someone makes sense or doesn't make sense if you don't understand the language. And I started reading about astrological symbols. And I hear you. If you go to the back of the newspaper, I don't want to go there because I don't want to offend people. It's so generic. They have to. So I ask myself, okay, you need to go to reputable sources. Are there reputable sources? And there are some metaphysical sources that I knew from the previous century. And this is where my academic background goes. So this is when I actually started with books about patterns and about symmetry of the universe, about the rhythms of ups and downs. To me, astrology is about the ups and downs and those rhythms of the universe. And they didn't feel very far from physics once you start thinking about cycles. The Earth goes around the sun. The sun actually goes around the center of the galaxy. And I said, hey, that makes sense. Again, this is a very small, narrow portion of what normally people refer to astrology. So I'm all with you on the foofy part. But that was my journey, and it was very unexpected. I was right in the smack of it, offering readings to friends and family before I even realized that I was doing it. It came as a surprise to me too.
I love that idea of if you don't understand something, learn to speak the language, right? To go to get below the surface of the stuff that we find out there in the, you know, in the public square and social media, and get a little deeper and understand the facts of it. That's super interesting. And I wonder, I do want to talk about this idea of cycles, but I'm curious, what is the reaction to your peers and colleagues in academia when you're doing readings and spending time on astrology? What does that pivot look like?
That's a very good question. And until 2020, I wasn't sharing any with my colleagues from academia. That was the aha moment when I finally said, that's it. I'm going to put it out there. Judge me. I don't want to offend people. If someone is closed off, there is no point of fighting. They're not ready to hear. They're going to hear only what they want to hear. Nowadays, I don't hide it, but I don't say it just to provoke the fight. There are scientists who are open. And if I find someone who is open, we have a very meaningful discussion. And again, it all circles around, why not put it to the test? If something works, it's valid. If it doesn't, it doesn't. We have no disagreement on that, because that's what science is all about. Go test against reality, come back. If you can reproduce it, repeat it. If someone in China can do the same thing and get the same result, I call it science. If it works for all of us and we agree, there's no problem. Of course, there are plenty of people who are very closed. I don't know why. They say, astrology doesn't make sense. You're telling me that Mars exerts gravitational field or force and reaches the Earth? Well, I rolled my eyes and I said, help yourself. Because astrology has nothing to do with gravity. And they're putting words in my mouth, which I didn't. So I just made peace. This is where the soft skills come. And I want to circle very quickly to your comment that you said you're amazed that I said physics was easy. I always admire people who have the soft skills, the people who are smart enough to walk away from a debt conversation. So I admire those people, and I want to be like them when I grow up.
Well, yeah, God, that's so interesting. I love this idea. I forget where I heard it. This saying is, you're not crazy, you're just first. And so you would never have known that there were people in the scientific world that were open to this unless you had the courage to do it first. And I'm sure, and you're right, the people that aren't open to it, it doesn't mean they'll never be open to it. They're just not open to it now. We're not going to spend our time on them. But all of a sudden, there's people come out, and I'm sure you heard, oh, I'm so glad you talked about this. I've been interested in this, but I've been reluctant to talk about it. And it just takes that one person to open the door and really start a conversation that otherwise would never have happened.
Yes, that sense of am I crazy? It's very strong. I don't consider myself first. Those ancient concepts, but probably they come and go. And there's that idea of cycles. They come and go. And so for the last 50 years, they have been going. And so I feel like we have forgotten or we have lost the memory. And I owe it to my closest friend and my husband, the two very, very solid grounding influences. They both are physicists, very practical, pragmatic people who keep me grounded. So they were my original sounding boards. I would say, this sounds so far-fetched. And they would say, yes, but is it working? And they were obviously the first guinea pigs for me to experiment with this idea of cycles. And they kept coming back. It's like, wow, we don't know what that is. But that timing of the cycles, without even any interpretations, ups and downs, they work. Give us more. So I owe it to them.
Well, that's amazing. Can you tell me what this idea of cycles is all about and how you might use it in your own life?
Yes, the cycles, it's one of those examples of something that is right in front of our faces, and it's so part of us that we don't notice it. It's only when someone points it, and I had a classmate in undergraduate who pointed it out for me. He was very excited to work on cycles, and that is how I caught on and said, wow, everything is about cycles. The way we measure time in a scientific way, every time when you look at your clock, someone is counting little cycles of some cesium crystal vibrating. The way we follow the seasons, you are living according to that cycle. My grandmother was a farmer and she lived according to that yearly cycle. This is time to plant, now harvest. Around Christmas, she didn't do work. It was time to rest. Now with modern society, we don't follow the cycle so much, and there's the stress and all that misery. But the cycles are in front of us. And so I, of course, being an educator, always want to go and share. Did you know about that? And did you know about this? The cycles are right in front of us. As soon as someone points it out, you're going to walk away today and start seeing all those repetitions. Now, some cycles are not as visible. And this is where we go into astrology. You can say, well, what do you mean? The moon cycle is 29 days. Does it really work? Well, there's the scientist in me. When I read about that, I said, okay, let's just test it. So for 2 years, I actually journaled every day. I would get up, write the moon today is in this portion of the sky. And then I'll go and do my job. And the next day I'll come back and write it. And then I'll go do my job. And after about 2 years, I noticed that there was one specific part of the sky when I would wake up and say, you know what, enough with the procrastination. You have your list. You have to do it. Get over with that. And I ask, why am I always with that attitude when the moon is in this particular part of the sky? And it turned out to correspond to my ascendant. So now I have this hashtag in my mind. When I get lazy, as you said, or procrastinating, I tell myself, procrastination is not forever. Just wait until the moon goes there. I don't have an explanation for you at all. But I know that something happens, and on that day I get up and say, just get it over with. It's not that much. So it is reassuring. We're not lazy. We're just following the moon cycle.
Yeah. So that's a great example. Like you said, like if somebody told me about that, I'd be like, you're crazy. But if somebody said, why don't you just try this? Now, I don't know about 2 years, but just try this. And you talked about this earlier, talked about we're going to come up with the hypothesis, or we'll figure out maybe the science or the explanation later. But let's just go out in there and play and see what happens. And if you come up with this evidence that's undeniable, that you have parts of the month where you're energetic and barreling through your list of things you've been procrastinating on, and there's other times where you're just like, I can't explain it, but every 14 days, I feel like this for 2 days and don't feel like doing anything. It's an interesting way to think about it. You think that most people would see that sort of cyclic, some differences anyway in those cycles?
I would say if you have a scientific inclination, you will catch it. it's a mindset, right? And so this is not about a diploma, but more about there's some people who are, if you're open to experiment, you will catch the pattern. And in this case, you're not alone. You can reach out to me. I'll be happy to share what I have seen. So there's two different levels of experimentation. One, where everything has to be proper, nobody influenced you, you check against someone's results in China, and you can publish in Nature, and you hope to get a Nobel Prize. But there's also very mundane science in which it's good enough, it works for you. If nobody can replicate it in China, who cares? You're feeling better, you're clearing up your to-do list, and nobody is frustrated in the family. So that will never make it in Nature. You'll never get a Nobel Prize for being the best scientist, but it works for you. This is why I encourage people to be the scientists in their own life. The ultimate indicator for me is how is the quality of my life? If the quality is improving, I'm doing it well. No publications. So in your case, you don't have to do 2 years. The moon, I started with the moon cycle because it's the shortest one, 29 days. So if you can go around probably 5 or 6 times, some patterns might emerge.
Yeah, that's interesting. As you were talking about that, I was reflecting. One thing that I've discovered over the last year, for example, is my daily cycle. And so I chop up my day into different pieces because I know that in the morning I have my best ideas, I have all my energy. And if I'm doing any deep thinking, critical thinking, or creative work, it has to happen before 1 o'clock. I always record conversations like this in the morning. My producer, Amy, will tell you, I don't like to do this in the afternoon because I'm just not as sharp. So I've already recognized that there's a cycle to my daily life. What I'm hearing you saying is there might be a way to take that principle, which I started with experimentation, just like you talked about. And I don't care whether it works for anybody else or whether there's a scientific basis behind it. I just found it works and it probably wouldn't pass any scientific scrutiny, but it makes my life easier. So that's really interesting that I could apply that to maybe monthly, annual sort of cadences that might happen if I can just experiment a bit.
Be the scientist in your life.
Yeah.
And that is where an astrological book will be more helpful than reading the back column of the newspaper.
Right.
There are some books that are more theoretical, more abstract inclined, and they will be more helpful because they're more likely to tell you this 29-day cycle, this is how it plays. The 29-year cycle, this is how it plays. Other books are more about, look what I read for you, look what I said, and look what this person did, and look at this celebrity, and it's lost. I finally clicked into the cycles with the book that is called Astrology for the Millions. And it was published in 1942. It comes out of print and then goes into print because apparently there are a lot of people like me who like it, aimed exactly at that, to engage everybody who wants to say, hey, I want to try it. 29 years is a long time. But when I read that book, that was my first reaction. I want to test it. And it has been a very interesting experience testing that 29-year cycle.
I can't wait to see the look on my wife's face when I tell her that I'm going to read that a book about astrology, because, you know, the law of attraction, which I want to talk about in a second, because just a personal side note, I mentioned my wife's a very spiritual person. She's been talking to me about, you know, the law of attraction and manifesting and being intentional, et cetera. And for the first 10 years that she was talking to me, I just really dismissed it. But then I don't know what it was, but there was just a crack. I just became a little bit curious and then a little bit more curious. But I've also found that there's a scientific basis for it, that everything in the universe vibrates and the things that vibrates on certain frequencies. And so when you think about it from a scientific basis, like, oh, this thing that I thought was super kind of weird and my wife was crazy, it's like I want to believe it. I just need somebody to tell me there's some science in it so that I can feel better about believing it. And I wonder how that applies to these other things you've talked about in terms of the effortless reality and so on.
I hear you, because you just described the stages for myself. The right. First time you hear, it's like, what is that thing? Really? And I don't know which one came first for me, but there were two very significant steps or transitions in my mindset. We talk about resonance. And this is an established fact in the physical sciences. Every system, every object has a set of vibrations. So this actually links to the cycles. Vibrations are just cycles. And so depending on how many cycles you do a second, the shorter the cycles, the higher the frequency. That's how it works. And in physics and engineering, it's a big deal. Nobody says, oh, this doesn't work. In fact, it's already in our everyday life. There's a famous Tacoma Narrows Bridge. It collapsed. And it's one of the few instances we accidentally caught it on video back then from the 1940s. And so on that day, the weather pattern was such that the poking by the wind coincided with one of the natural frequencies of that bridge. Everybody has those natural frequencies, you, me, the building. So that bridge, we can see this happening on YouTube. That bridge begins to swing higher and higher and higher. There's the swinging of the little child on the playground. Without the safety measures, it collapses. So there's the aspect for me that worked. I said, hey, look, it's everywhere and you can see it. We don't have radios in our cars anymore. It's all Bluetooth, right? Wi-Fi. I don't know. If you have a radio in your car, every time when you tune into your favorite radio station, you're playing the resonance. The waves from all the broadcasters are coming. Right now, all waves are coming. But I'm engaging only with one set of waves and communicating with you. So there's your law of attraction working on a daily basis without calling it special names and going into the spiritual community. It's a matter of communication, I think. Many physicists would not speak in spiritual terms, and a lot of people from the spiritual community do not know the physics terms. And so we're arguing and quarreling for no reason here. And the second aha moment was that the law of the question is not whether the law of attraction works. The question is actually that it works 24/7. And so if you sit on your couch and you visualize money, you visualize the abundance, the millions, and they're coming. Okay. Do a test. Sit on the couch. How many minutes or hours can you sit and hold your mind picturing those millions? This is about mind training. After a moment or 2 moments, you're thinking, maybe I should have eggs for dinner, or maybe I should have a takeout. I forgot to tell my wife to turn off the lights. And you get what you're thinking. So this is why so many people think that it doesn't work. It's in a sense of denial. They deny to themselves that 24 hours, they're not thinking about the millions of the dollars. We need mind training. Otherwise, you're getting chaotic asks. Dinner, talk to wife, go get some errands. Oh, back to the money. And out of the 24 hours, how many minutes really or seconds did you hold that vision? Well, then you get what you're thinking about.
You get what you're thinking about. Yeah. And when I come back to maybe this, when I'm kind of processing all of these new ideas and I come back to this effortless reality and that, you know, sort of deadline that I've got to meet tomorrow, it strikes me that, you know, for me, maybe it's about not fighting the universe. Like if I understood more about the times of the day and the times of the month where I'm most creative and I could control my chaotic mind and focus on the things that mattered, that these things would just come easier instead of trying to force them into my deadlines and trying to spread my attention over too many things. I don't know. I'll have to process this because I guarantee this conversation is going to sit with me for a while. But to me, that the idea of maybe it's not effortless, but God, it really shouldn't be this hard. You know, and when that idea strikes me sometime between tomorrow and 4 o'clock, or today and tomorrow, 4 o'clock, hopefully, it'll be like, oh yeah, like it's so simple.
Exactly. You're tapping into that effortless reality, and it's the moment when you said, it doesn't have to be that difficult. There has to be another way. For me, that's a very key word. When I catch myself saying with exasperation, there has to be another way, it's a reminder for me to step out of the situation. Have you thought that most of our problems are due to us trying to do too much? Mm-hmm. And we still think that you have to go and fix it. But sometimes it's just a moment to step out of the situation just for a second. And you see it from a different angle, and then you say, oh, how did I miss that? But while you're in, running around with your to-do list and trying to fit everything to your own preconceived ideas, it's a self-defeating attitude, but we all do it. That's the, mm-hmm. the whole goal for us, to get enough of those moments to step out. And then you see how things kind of coalesce on their own. It's a very drastic change in the mindset. Step out and things will fall naturally. We are trained to think that we have to go and fix it or else they'll be broken without us. But many times it's actually the other way around. And that is one of the biggest aha moments for each one of us.
Wow. I love that. One of the last things I wanted to ask you about, I was listening to your podcast. You've got a new podcast called Effortless Reality. I was coming home from a cottage. I had 3 hours to myself and I binged on a bunch of it. And it was really revelatory, super interesting. One of the things you talked about, or this saying that I couldn't get out of my head, was the universe has its own agenda. Can you talk to me a little bit about what that means?
The universe has its own agenda. It is my way of saying that things are not the way you think. At any given moment, you think this is my goal and it goes there. But you don't see all the details. We forget about that. Willfully or unwillfully, I don't know. But at any given point, when you set up your plan, you're saying, this is it, I'm on top of it. Are you really? Do you? So my most amazing moments in life happened just when I stepped back and I realized about an experience that I liked or didn't like, that it actually had a completely different significance for my life. And this circles back to the cycles. When I was testing the 29-year cycle for me, I was following the Saturn. That's the Saturn position in the sky. And in that book that I mentioned, The Astrology for the Millions, the book starts with Saturn and says, hey, if you find Saturn in the lower left corner of your chart, forget about recognition. And we all want recognition. I like to meet people who say, yes, you're awesome. Thank you. You made a difference. Who doesn't like that? It gives you meaning. So I remember it was a very dark moment in my life, and I felt like I was overlooked, dismissed. And I asked, well, what is going on? So during that most obscure moment in my life, I remember astrology helped me a lot. It's like, oh, okay, well, if it's no recognition, no recognition. I'll wait 7 years for the Saturn to go to some different portion of my chart. But then I got this sabbatical award at the college I was working. And to me, award means recognition, yes? I was like, okay, maybe astrology doesn't work. It turned out that I got zero recognition. It's almost absurd and laughable how you can get the most prestigious award at your workplace. And people literally at one meeting, they forgot to write my name. They were reading the list of all the awardees and my name was not there. You can see how you'll be angry, upset, go home, you know, throw a temper tantrum. Your spouse has to like calm you down. But knowing that cycle, I said, oh, okay. So I truly don't get recognition. So what is the whole purpose of getting the award? In the hindsight, that happened 10 years ago. In the hindsight, when I look, that was the time when I had 4.5 months for myself to actually distill all these ideas, to get some space of the everyday drama and to start thinking about myself, my spiritual development, what am I doing? So there's the universe having its own agenda. On the surface, it was like, award, congratulations. But really underneath all the ideas, everything I do actually was hatched during that 4.5 month period. If they had told me, I wouldn't have believed it. And I even have the proof, because if you go on YouTube, you can actually find physics videos. That was the sabbatical, to create physics videos, very mundane. And they're there from 2014. You can find them, very boring, very advanced. But there it is. Behind that layer is all the ideas and my new me.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I love that. This has been, God, what a conversation. One last question. So what's next? What are you most excited about now?
The next for me is to actually put my stories out there for more people to find them. I feel like there are many people who are probably a little bit behind in their own cycles, and I want to spare them that initial moments of loneliness or doubt. Am I crazy? Am I the only one? So my immediate goals for the next couple of years is to put my stories out there so that those who are following and their cycles are a little bit behind mine can actually take advantage. I did the math. This is my science person. I did the math. Even 1% of 1% of 1% of the world population resonates with what we are discussing today. Those are thousands of people. Right? When you do the math, it's like, hey, that's not bad at all. Right? If you focus on the percent, you just get depressed. It's like, okay, nobody understands me. But now with the internet and the social media and being able to reach out everyone, I find it an exciting moment in life.
No kidding. That's amazing. And so what if people are curious and want to learn more, where can they find you?
I have a website and it's called effortlessreality.com, and they can find some videos, contact information, links to some of my blogs. So all the information and the links I keep at that website.
Amazing. You know, I just quickly, a personal reflection. I was talking to some of my friends at this cottage I mentioned on the weekend, and we were talking about the podcast, and they were like, so why are you doing this? Or what is it about? And this conversation is what it's about. Coming back to some of the things you've talked about, like having a conversation like this a year ago, I'd be like, why on earth? For one thing, do you mean there's a crackpot on this earth that's, you know, that's scientific and is talking about astrology? Like, why on earth would I, why does that person exist? And why would I talk to them? And coming back to the universe, it's not an accident. Like, I don't know, there's been 1,000 little things that have happened to led us to being here with this, having this conversation today. And it's, I'm just so grateful. It's just been amazing. I really can't thank you enough for giving up your time for this. This has been, yeah, just a conversation like no other I think I've ever had.
Well, I'm grateful for this opportunity to put the stories out there.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Tatiana. This has been awesome. And I am going to go get that book, Astrology for the Millions. And I can't wait to see my wife's face when it arrives in the mail.
Well, thank you. It has been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.